Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hey folks, Brian here. Before the show starts, I wanted to let you know my recording software used my computer's internal microphone, not my actual microphone for the recording tonight. So the sound's a little bit different than usual. It shouldn't be too bad, but I wanted to give you a heads up. Enjoy. Fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. I am Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. We are past the trade deadline for Major League Baseball. It is approximately 5.5 hours after the trade deadline passed. And Chris, no real news today, no real news yesterday, but there was enough news Sunday and Monday to keep us going for a bit. The biggest news is that we have a new Met. His name is Marcus Stroman. I don't think any of us saw this coming until the rumors started leaking out there that they were interested in Stroman. I still think it's a weird move, but I'm starting to really enjoy thinking about what this could mean. And so, just, you know, obviously trades are not made in a vacuum, but in a vacuum, what do you think about the Mets getting Marcus Stroman?
It was a pleasant surprise. It's a cool thing to go, okay. We kind of thought they were going to do one thing coming into all this, and they did not the total opposite, but they went and got a guy who maybe the Blue Jays weren't totally crazy about trading him to the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Rays. It's always a little weird, and obviously we'll touch a little bit on this too, but it's always weird trading within the division. That being said, I don't know. From our own prospect guys, from some former Amazing Avenue prospect folks, one of whom used to host this podcast.
I wonder who you'd be talking about. Rob Cast?
Yes, I emailed Rob to check in. But they just didn't give up that much. And you never know with prospects. It could end up being something totally different. But it's they didn't give up that much in Anthony Kay, and with Woods Richardson, he's young, he's exciting that he's played at the levels that he has, and you know, they had promoted him. He didn't actually pitch yet in St. Lucie, but they had promoted him up there before they traded him. There's some intrigue there, but based on everything that I've read and heard from all of those guys who pay attention to this stuff on a daily basis, they didn't really give up that much. And the national consensus on, you know, the two of them, neither one was a top 100 prospect. And that doesn't always mean anything. You could be in the top 10 and not pan out. You could be Jacob deGrom and be under the radar and skip all of that and then come up and be one of the best at what you do. But generally, it wasn't really thought that they gave up too much. So Stroman wasn't a guy I really looked too hard into, because I didn't think, even when that weird thing came up, oh, they're thinking of trading Syndergaard to the Padres and then using part of that return to get Stroman, which was just, as I wrote on the site, galaxy brain shit.
Yeah.
Even at that point, I didn't really think they were going to do it. And then they just went out and got him. And it was kind of like, okay. And it sets them up nicely. It's only one more year of control, but it set them up where they have a pretty great rotation. It's not quite as flashy as what the Astros have now after getting Greinke and adding him to Cole and Verlander. It's not quite that star-studded at the top, but I think Stroman's probably a little bit better of a pitcher than he's gotten credit for, and I would personally consider him the clear number three.
Agreed.
Out of the five pitchers that the Mets have right now. Anybody who's read the site or listened to the podcast, I think, knows that I have not been worried about Syndergaard having a high ERA for a few months. To me, he's clearly second best. This was the year that I finally said, all right, DeGrom's going to have the better ERA of the two, because I just need to acknowledge that that's happening on an annual basis. But yeah, I don't know. I'm into it. It put some life into how I'm going to watch this team over the next couple of weeks, maybe the next couple of months. I'm not reaching out to try to buy a ticket plan for the rest of the season right now.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody tries to get you to buy one, though.
I don't know. Maybe I'm blacklisted for all I know.
That's true.
I'll go to get one and they'll be like, nope. And then I'll be like, all right, have my wife try to get it. And yeah. Then be like, nope, same address. No good. Yeah, but we're probably, if they get back to or over 500, we're probably not that far from them coming up with some, what they did in 2015, which is when I got hooked back on the ticket plan for three seasons before bailing, or four? Oh, God, that was too long. but what they had done in 2015 was basically Cespedes comes over, they just go on a roll, and a week or two into August, they say, essentially buy a season ticket for the rest of the current season.
And guaranteed playoff tickets, right?
Right. So they had done that. Whether or not they do that again, I don't know. But I could see them sort of saying, all right, 2 weeks from now, they're over 500. They're in the mix. Put down your deposit for a ticket plan next season, and whatever level of ticket plan that you're doing will give you that access to playoff tickets for this year. I don't know. I try not to view everything through the lens of the Mets selling tickets, but it's definitely part of the whole operation. And yeah.
I mean, I also think we're a long way away from a playoff celebration here.
No, it's, I mean, for a couple of weeks now, I fully acknowledge it's ridiculous that we're even talking about this.
But it's not as ridiculous as it was a week ago. It really wasn't. And that's, you know, again, looking at this sort of in a vacuum, I think that both getting Stroman and keeping Wheeler will make for better baseball down the stretch. Right. In terms of if we're only looking at this from like Brian's personal enjoyment watching the game, I would much rather watch Stroman and Wheeler pitch than, you know, Flexen or, I don't know, insert quad A guy here. Right. It makes for much better baseball. I think that the National League East is a bad enough division this year that if the Mets got hot, it wouldn't be crazy to see them challenge for the wild card in that division, you know, or at least challenge the Phillies for a spot for the wild card in that division. I keep saying in that division as if there's a National League East wild card. I know there's not, listeners. Don't tweet me. What I mean is that there aren't a lot of teams in front of them in the division that I'm all that worried about, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
You know, and it seems like, you know, weirder things have happened than teams at this point in the season with this record making a run for it. Even if they don't get there, it'll at least make the last 2 months of the season fun to watch. And that's really good. What I'm still kind of unsure about is what the Mets' game plan is for this season and beyond at this point. I think that this is the selling Vargas makes total sense. No one's going to argue with selling Vargas. He was going to be a free agent, blah, blah, blah. But not selling Wheeler seems like something you would only do if you believed there was a shot for this season. Because what's the reason to keep Wheeler for the rest of the season if you're not making a playoff push? Can you think of one?
I guess just out of principle, you could. Okay, we're not going to get a great return. We're not going to get a good return. We're going to get something that's going to amount to not much more than the Vargas return, right? So we just don't want to. So there's that aspect of what you're mentioning going for it. You at least maintain the ability to give him a qualifying offer. And then you have more time to negotiate with him if you want to avoid the qualifying offer process and just say, hey, look, we really want to keep you around. We've got most of these guys are around for at least two more years, Stroman one, but we really think that'd be a great rotation. And maybe they work out a deal that avoids that process entirely. Whether or not they're thinking of doing any of those things, at least you have a little more flexibility. One nice thing, I guess, if you had traded him was that he'd be a free agent. And from his perspective, he couldn't get a qualifying offer under those circumstances. So he'd be out there and you could, if you really wanted him to be that guy to fill your rotation, you can go and try to get him to come back. And we've seen it. It's not super common, but obviously we saw it with Familia. And it happens every once in a while around baseball. But yeah, it's... I kind of like that rather than go to the extreme of everybody who's got an expiring contract will just take somebody and they are unlikely to have an impact at the major league level. I kind of like the other extreme of asking for too much for everybody.
Sure.
At least out of principle. Like, I like overall at the trade deadline that nobody just gave the Yankees a player.
Right.
You should ask the Yankees for a lot.
They have a lot to give.
Right. And it's not just, oh, the big bad Yankees and they're the only team with money and all that. That's not the reality of baseball at this point in time, but they are, they're loaded. They're loaded with talent. They do have and spend a lot of money on payroll, and they shouldn't be criticized for that. But yeah, so I'm kind of glad nobody just flipped them a starting pitcher and
called it a day.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, look, if the Mets do want to negotiate with Wheeler and work out an extension, I think that's absolutely fine. That's a good thing to do, possibly. But I can't see them offering Wheeler an $18 million qualifying offer. Can you?
I think I'm with you on that because they'd be so afraid of him accepting.
Well, exactly. You know, an $18 million for 1 year is a lot of money no matter how you shake it. And a lot of money for a guy who's been good, but hasn't been $18 million good. I mean, that's more than DeGrom's making next year, isn't it?
I forget how DeGrom's contract goes up. I know it gets there, but it would put him in the ballpark of DeGrom, regardless.
Right, and he's not DeGrom.
No, I like him just fine, but he certainly is not Jacob DeGrom. Very few are.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, look, this is not about, this is not one of those bizarre to me fan rants about saving an ownership group money. Like, this is not about the Wilpons shouldn't offer Zach Wheeler $18 million. I'm saying the Wilpons won't offer him that money because right. The Wilpons are cheap.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Clearly. If Zach Wheeler can get $18 million somewhere, then hell yeah.
Yeah, go good for it, him. Man. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
But yeah, you kind of have to always walk this line of knowing that paying him $18 million wouldn't be the worst thing in the world in terms of what he might be able to give you. He might be able to be worth that if he has a season better than this one. But, you know, he doesn't have to be a Cy Young or anything to be worth that. But you can know that, and then you can also know if they offer him that and he accepts, get ready for a winter of nobody being affordable.
Right, exactly.
Like, if Zach Wheeler is out of the picture and he's not on the roster at all, I also don't expect them to go after Cole and try to get him to come in and pay him what he would need as the premier pitching free agent. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, like I said, in terms of my enjoyment watching the games, these are good developments, right? This means better pitching. It means no Jason Vargas. And although I have to say, before he went Neanderthal and threatened a reporter, I was starting to warm to Vargas just because I think there's something endearing about a guy who clearly does not have the stuff he once had, that is just able to get by with smoke and mirrors. He was becoming a much, like, not just a poor man, but like a man who has no concept of money. That man's Bartolo Colon. You know, just the guy who keeps throwing despite the fact that people should be hitting him left and right, and he's surviving. I like to root for that kind of player. That's my kind of player sometimes. But the minute that you threaten violence to a reporter, you know, fuck off. You're gone. You're dead to me. So I'm not heartbroken about Vargas being gone. And I have to say, like, you know, if you look at the major league team, just the major league team, it looks like they essentially pulled off a Vargas for Stroman swap. Right, you're losing Vargas in the rotation, you're gaining Stroman. I don't see how you can look at that and think that's bad. Just for the major league product, this is a much, much better person to be starting every fifth day than Jason Vargas. And I
think to complement that point, not having that temptation, I think we brought it up last week, right? Okay, the buyout is $2 million, so it's really 1 year. $6 million, is Jason Vargas worth that? That's gone. You've eliminated this temptation that you might have. Although, given the circumstances, it seems like they were happy to part with him. But 2 months further out from threatening Tim Healy, maybe 2 months more of cromulent pitching performance, and you might get tempted by that. So that to me is good, that there's no temptation to say, all right, we're going to allocate that. He's got a rotation spot. We're paying him. That's not their team option anymore. If the Phillies want to do that, great. If he hits free agency, I don't think there's going to be any strong push by the Mets to go get him back.
Especially after he was reportedly telling people he wanted to be traded away.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, yeah. Apparently he was telling his friends he wanted to be traded.
Yeah, well.
So, and look, can I blame him? Not necessarily. But, like, you don't want that stuff to hit the press. That just, nobody benefits from that.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. Just to remove the temptation of bringing him back is an excellent side effect to trading him away.
Yeah.
And we should mention the return they got for Vargas was practically nothing. And, you know, I got a less than kind email from a reader about my piece about the return that they got. And I just want to say, I am not criticizing the return the Mets got for Vargas, because I don't believe that they could have gotten anything much better for him. This is not me saying, you know, that this is hashtag Brody's mess or anything like that. This is the reality of trading a rental player at the tail end of his career who wasn't that great to begin with. you get Austin Bossert when you trade that guy at this point. You know, this is not, we will never get to 2011 again. We will never get the next Zach Wheeler for half a season of, for not even half, for 3 months of Carlos Beltran. Right? That's never going to happen again. And so these are the type of trades that happen. So I was not criticizing the Mets for making this move. I was simply saying that the return that they got was nothing all that special. And I stand by that statement.
Yeah.
I will also say that, of course, he played baseball with Jeff Wilpon's son at UPenn. Of course he did.
But that's, yep.
it's too perfect. But of course he did. And, I mean, look, he's not on the team anymore. We don't have to sit through his laboriously long and frustrating starts anymore. We get to watch Marcus Stroman, who is, you know, who's not Cy Young, but he's certainly not Jason Vargas either. So I'm pretty pleased with the way that this turned out in the short term. But let's talk for just a second here about the long term. Do you think that the Mets reasonably believe they have a shot at contending this year?
I don't know. It's hard to say. They've certainly talked it up with the way everything played out, and they might believe, as they have for much of the season, that they are capable of it. So, hey, if we believe in these players, we think there's been some underperformance. Why wouldn't we still believe in them now? I think that's possible. It's probably hard to really decipher which part of it is the message they're getting out there to the rest of the baseball world and Mets fans, and which part of it is something that they really think. So I don't know. In the sense of this two wild card thing is crazy and anything can happen.
Yes.
I think unless you're the Marlins, and maybe there's one or two other teams that have joined them in the National League since, you might be able to say, hey, we're a good 10-game stretch away from being
relevant.
Right.
Yeah.
You look around the league and Arizona traded a great pitcher away at a time when did they still have a winning record coming into today? They might have.
They might have, yes.
But they were more relevant in the wild card mix than the Mets were, and they traded away a legitimately great player. Who, but just as a tangent on Greinke, I feel like he's going to be absolutely phenomenal in Houston.
Yes.
It's one of those matches that you go like, oh, how did that not happen sooner?
I think he's going to have the Mike Mussina on the Yankees moment now, where everybody's like, where'd this guy come from? And people who really pay attention are like, no, he's been doing this for years now. It's just that you're going to watch him pitch in the World Series this year.
Right.
He never pitched in the World Series before, did he? As soon as I said that, I thought, well, maybe he pitched in the World Series before. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. The Royals weren't good when he was there. Milwaukee didn't make it to the World Series. His brief stint with the Angels. No, you know why he didn't pitch in the World Series? Because of the Mets.
That's the answer I was hoping for, baby. Yeah.
That's why. Because, I remember something else I wanted to rant about. Like, when did we forget that Noah Syndergaard was already awesome at the major league level?
Yes, let's talk about this for a minute. So we should say, and we're sorry for the sharp turn here, but, you know, there was a lot of talk about trading Syndergaard this week, and thank goodness they didn't do it. And if they try and do it again in the offseason, I'll be just as pissed then. But, you know, people are talking about Syndergaard like he hasn't lived up to his potential. And you and I were texting about this, and you said, like, does no one remember the 2015 NLDS? And I said, does no one remember the 2016 wildcard game? Like, Syndergaard has been great on a big stage already. He's done this.
Right. And he's been great over the course of several major league seasons. He's, as you just said, he's done that on the big stage. He has been a superstar pitcher already. They're like, oh, unmet potential. Like, what are we talking about?
I mean, sure, maybe he can be better, but do you know how rare that is?
Right, and I think we're a little spoiled by DeGrom just figuring out ways to get better and better and better.
And we were spoiled by Harvey in terms of coming up and being great right away.
Right.
And so I think that you take those things in a combination and you get to the, you get to this bullshit conclusion that Syndergaard wasn't great.
But since Syndergaard's career began, well, I want to make sure I get this correct. But since it began, he's been, I'm going to say off the top of my head, one of the top 20 pitchers, starting pitchers in baseball. And
I'll be more conservative and say top 30.
Yeah, but this year's ERA might skew it a little bit, but I'm going to look it up and find out. But either one of those, that's nothing to sneeze at. Every team's got five starting pitchers. If you're in that tier, you've been doing something really, really well. It's just a reminder, and I think people might realize it. Oh man,
what
I'm just going by ERA among qualified pitchers since his career started in 2015. Oh wait, no, let's filter it down to starters. Then I'll be correct. And, you know, granted, this is a long span of time now, and there are some pitchers who have been really good who haven't fallen into that. But of those guys who have been around for the same years that he has the 12th best ERA.
There we go.
In baseball. DeGrom is third. It's Kershaw, Scherzer, DeGrom, Ryu, Rich Hill, Greinke, Verlander, Kluber, Bumgarner, Kyle Hendricks, Sale, Syndergaard, Arrieta, Snell, Strasburg, Cole. At 16, that's the type of pitcher he is, including the struggles from the first half of this season.
Can you imagine what a different list that would be if an earthquake took Los Angeles off the board? So many Dodgers in that list, man.
Yeah, either some or all of that time spent with the Dodgers.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy, but
yeah, it is.
But yeah, I don't even want to go back to the refrain of Lucas Duda is capital G good. That's not what Syndergaard is. Syndergaard
is capital G great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know he wasn't up until the All-Star break. He had some gems, he had some stinkers, whatever. But just to be clear, we are talking about one of the best pitchers in baseball who just isn't as good as Jacob DeGrom, who Marcus Stroman very adeptly said today, and I'll buy it, I'll believe it. He's new, I'm excited, right? Yeah. But he said over the last couple of years, when he's asked who the best pitcher in baseball was, his answer was Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah,
which is the correct answer to give when you're meeting the press on Jacob DeGrom's team for the first time. But I'll buy it. I'll buy that he was believing it and saying it. I'm in. I don't think anybody's going to come out and be like, actually, he used to hype up Kershaw to me. Like, I don't think that's going to come out. So
I don't think so either.
I'll take him at his word.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, I'm Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, host of The Vergecast. We've been revamping The Vergecast more and more lately, and we're coming out with episodes twice a week, sometimes even a third bonus episode. On Tuesdays, I talk to influential people around the world of tech, like Microsoft founder Bill Gates and other tech execs like the founder of Lime Scooters, the CEO of Beyond Meat. We've also been talking to a lot of reporters and academics about the major pressing policy issues in tech, like Facebook's content moderation, they're not doing great, YouTube's harassment plan, or lack thereof, and whether or not the government should break up Amazon, which maybe they should. And then every Friday, I sit down with executive editor Dieter Bohn and Paul Miller for our chat show. We cover the latest in tech news and product reviews. We bring in our other reporters from around The Verge. That show is a party. You should listen to it. You can hear all that and more if you subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'd love for you to listen and join us. So again, subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you there.
And so here's the thing, right? I think both of us thought the 2019 Mets were going to be a better team than they've been so far. And I think that both of us feel that Syndergaard is better than his first half, that Diaz is better than this season. I think we believe that Alonso, McNeil, and Conforto are for real.
Yep.
And if you believe those things, and you take with that DeGrom, and now you take with that Stroman, and you see what Seth Lugo has done this season. Seth Lugo last night, man, amazing, right? Just amazing performance. You take that core, I don't see why they can't be very good next year if they don't blow it up this offseason.
Yeah.
Some smart moves, fixing the bullpen. You can do these things, and they could be very good next season. And I know I sound like a Pollyanna when I say that, but, I mean, I can't picture a better... I can't picture a better core to build around than what the Mets have right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine the 27 Yankees or whatever, but you know what I'm saying. Like, this is a great place to be. The Mets have not had this deep of a core in a very long time. And yet, I don't think Mets fans, and I'll put myself in this category, I don't think we are as optimistic about the future as we should be. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, probably.
Is that just Wilpon disgust or what?
Yeah, it's like the opposite. Ugh, words. The opposite of Stockholm syndrome is like I'm going to resist that entirely and be skeptical and negative about everything, which I get. I get it. It's coming from a good place, but it might be that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think with Stroman, I mean, even when Wheeler probably departs in free agency, I think with Stroman in place, you don't need to go out and sign a superstar to be your fifth starter. You know, and I don't think that Mats is going to throw a Maddox complete game every start from now on. But I think if you think of going out and signing a solid fourth, fifth starter, and then you sign two or three other guys who can start if need be, add some actual starting pitching depth there, and you put together something that looks like an actual bullpen, I don't see why this team couldn't be very good next year. And, that excites me. And that's what's weird about this deadline. I don't feel like any team this deadline changed their fortunes all that much, save the Astros, let's say. Like, the Braves got better today. The Braves did a lot of nice small moves today. But the Braves were probably going to make the playoffs anyway. I don't know if what the Braves did made them National League favorites versus just National League East favorites right now, But all these teams just made these incremental improvements to make them better, not just for this season in some cases, but for the future. And I can't remember another trade deadline where teams were this wishy-washy about what the rest of the season holds.
Yeah.
I don't get it, but it's fine. It's going to be fun. Are you a little surprised that Todd Frazier's still a Met?
Yeah, a little bit. he's another guy who's in a spot that I didn't really expect much of a return. But I kind of thought some team out there would want him.
Just as a veteran bench presence.
Yeah, and I felt like it was something the Mets could somewhat reasonably cover for. Obviously, it would help if Nimmo were healthy or if Juan Lagares could hit at all.
or if they didn't go out and spend $20 million this offseason on somebody who hasn't suited up in a uniform yet.
Yeah, yeah, that would help cover for Frazier. I'm sticking with it. I don't think Jed Lowry is going to play a game in a Mets uniform.
I was going to ask you, do you think that Jed Lowry or Yoenis Cespedes plays more games next season?
Oh, Cespedes.
Is there any player you're less confident about than Lowry playing another game for the Mets?
I mean, like R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon.
Oh, come on. They can come back.
Well, yeah, no, of course. Of course they could, but yeah, no. And it's funny, I liked Lowry as a player for all these years. It's just been, it's a situation that has resigned itself to nobody even asks about him anymore. I feel like people barely even ask about Nimmo, but
yeah.
But yeah, no, maybe so we'll be pleasantly surprised, but.
Well, here's my Lowry question. If Lowry was healthy this spring,
mm-hmm.
would Pete Alonso have started the year at first base?
Yeah, maybe not. Because maybe Frazier's getting time there. Alonso's worth more than what they're paying Lowry. So if that is directly related, then I guess they did okay.
I mean, I really think that this is, that if it wasn't for Lowry being hurt, Alonso wouldn't have come up until the Super 2 deadline.
Yeah.
And just think about how much worse this season would be from a pure enjoyment level without Pete.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were reminiscing in Slack about the moment that we had it click for us that Alonso might be for real as a major league power hitter. And I think I had said, oh, that home run in Miami. And somebody replied, that was his first one. And I didn't go back to double check it, but I assumed they said it confidently. So I assumed they were right. And it was just like, oh, okay, then I guess I stand by that answer. But it was just the one to center field that just, you went like, whoa. Yeah. On TV, it looked insanely impressive. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm very glad, even if this season ends nowhere near a wild card spot, I'm very glad that we will have had a full season of Pete Alonso.
Yeah. I was actually, my father-in-law and I were talking yesterday about this, about how when you look back at the Cano signing, or the Cano trade rather, the Cano trade really shows how little confidence the Mets had in McNeil or Alonso. Because if they really believe that McNeil was the player he was last season, you don't need Cano at second base. And the refrain was always, well, when he gets too old for second base, he'll slide over to first. Well, if you believe that Alonso is all you think he is, you wouldn't have Cano do that anyway. And so I wonder if the Mets had better evaluated those two young players if that trade would have happened.
Yeah.
And I'm still not totally against the trade. I'm not saying that, but, you know, it's really stark when you think about that for less money than they're paying Cano, they could have signed Kimbrel and Keuchel, still had Kalinic. It starts to look a little bit less of a good trade right now. I'm not ready to give up on it yet, but it's a weird trade. I don't know.
Yeah, and well, we'll see. I'm still not. I don't know. I haven't tapped out.
I haven't tapped out yet either. I really haven't. And I think that over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, Diaz could be worth the entire trade.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, what you said earlier in this episode, certainly think he is better than what his stat line is in 2019 right now.
I don't see how it could. I don't see how it couldn't be better than that.
Yeah, yeah, better than really bad, but I still think he's really, really good too.
Yeah, he's just had a combination of bad luck and just a really piss poor season.
Yeah,
and that's just how it is. Ready for an email?
Yeah, let's do it.
Please email us, folks. aaaudiopodcast@gmail.com, like our friend Paul did. Paul said he's been listener for a while and a Mets fan since 2015. He says that's a good year, and he is correct. He says, I try to gauge opinion from a number of national sources to try and gain more knowledge about baseball overall and the various trades that could or will happen. One thing I have found in recent times is a lot of national press and television don't like the Mets. One example is Buster Olney of ESPN, who does a daily podcast and is forever panning the Mets about the moves they make. The tweets slash articles he provides about Marcus Stroman's trade were deplorable. Do you ever feel protective that only Mets fans can have a go at the Mets? And when a national press figure thinks it's fair game, you feel obliged to say, hey, it's our team you're talking about. Keep up the good work, Paul. That's kind of like the little brother syndrome, right? Like, you can beat the shit out of your little brother, but if somebody else tries to, you stand up for him. Right? I definitely know what he means. Don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I get it. And I think coming from a perspective that we do, where we're all fans and we don't hide that, you know, we're not, not that anybody else on the professional level is, but we're openly Mets fans. So you might come at it from that angle, I guess, depending on the mood you're in. You know, if you're particularly angry at something they've done, then you might go along with it. But yeah, I will say I don't have familiarity with the things Olney has done specifically. So answering this in a very general sense, but one thing I come back to frequently is that you have some writers. Local, national, whatever, but professional, full-time writers who cover the sport sometimes try really, really hard to find the LOL Mets every step of the way, and you just don't have to force it. It's there. Like, you'll get it, and you'll know that there will be moments that everybody agrees they should be criticized, they should be mocked, but it's not every single thing they do. And I think that's important to remember. So I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of naming specifics, but yeah, I get it. I don't know if it's for me, not so much that I feel defensive of the team as much as I think that I approach every move they make with an open mind. And I think that familiarity of following with this team on a day-to-day basis, you can kind of filter out, okay, this really is ridiculous. You know, Mickey Callaway and Jason Vargas going after Tim Healy verbally or threatening to go after him physically in the case of Vargas, that was a moment that there was clear consensus. Everybody in the league, everybody who's involved in covering this, should be criticizing and mocking the Mets. Without any question. You have moments like that. So I guess because we know them so well, we know when you should really go in on them. And in the case of the Stroman trade, you're essentially putting all your stock in a certain prospect evaluator, whoever it may be. And if you do that, And you don't kind of just look at the broader view of everything, it's you can fall into a trap of thinking they did something really stupid. And I just don't see how the Stroman trade would fall into that category.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about this. On one hand, I definitely know that defensive posture that you take when someone's shitting all over the Mets. I tend to get that when people are shitting over things, like Chris said, that aren't ridiculous, or that every team does. Like, the Bobby Bonilla Day thing is tired, and we should all stop talking about it. Especially because so many teams do that. But every year, that's a big LOL Mets Day, right? But that's a very common practice. And just because Bobby Bonilla is a funny target for that, it becomes about the Mets. But that's not a Mets-related thing. But everybody does that. And then I definitely get defensive and feel like, you know, we'll talk about all the other contracts that were handed out that way. You know, and then I get a little bit defensive. But I will say this. I think that sometimes we take things, we being Mets fans, not as seriously as maybe we should, because we've been desensitized to all the insane bullshit that happens around us.
Yeah, that could be true.
You know, and so I think sometimes, like, having an impartial outsider look at this and say, like, puts a, like, fucked up stamp on something, like, and shows us, like, you know, this is really right. a problem. I think that that's useful sometimes, because we get so caught up in it that we fail to see what is bullshit and what is not bullshit.
Yeah.
So I can see it both ways. But I will say this. I will say that, you know, the Mets made the World Series not that long ago, and it only took writers and fans like a minute after the World Series to start picking on the Mets again. So I don't think that there's anything the Mets can do that will necessarily stop them from being the LOL Mets of the, like, the laughingstock of baseball, until there is, like, continued success, or the Wilpons sell the team. And I think that, as crazy as this is to say, the Mets have a better chance at sustained success in the next 5 years than they do over the Wilpons selling the team. So let's hope for some success.
Yeah. Please.
Please. Well, Chris, what's your music pick for this week?
Oh, yeah. Music pick. Okay.
Do you want me to go first?
I have one, but it might be a repetition of an earlier one. So, yeah, you go first while I try to figure that out.
If you search the name of the band on Amazing Avenue, you should be able to figure it out.
Yeah. All right. I'll do that while you do yours.
Okay. So, I am a big fan of Lou Barlow. He is the bass player for Dinosaur Jr. He's the leader of Sebado. I had a chance to go see him on Saturday night. I didn't for good, like, I wanted to be home with my kids reasons, but I have regretted it every minute ever since. But he has done this really, really cool thing. It's not an album, and it's not something that you can just, like, go out and listen to, but his record label is called Joyful Noise, and they're doing this thing, they're called the Artist Enabler Program. And so for $5 a month, you get exclusive songs from Lou Barlow every month delivered to you. And so the first installment came out this week, and it's 4 songs, and all 4 songs are really, really good. And then he also put up all the demos for those songs, so you can see how the songs sort of evolved from their original form into what they are now. Next month is supposedly a bunch of older songs that, like, he had made in the early 80s. It's just a really cool way to engage with a musician and to support the musician directly, you know. There's something like 100 members of this club already, and so that's $500 a month. That, you know, obviously the label's taking some of that, but Lou Barlow's getting, you know, a couple $100 a month from his fans directly. And that doesn't sound like a ton of money, but for an artist out there, $400 or $500... every month could make or break a lot of things. That could pay a lot of bills. And in this time when it seems like the big pop stars are getting bigger and bigger and everybody else is suffering, it's nice to see a situation put out there where an artist can interact directly with their fans, give their fans something really cool, and be supportive for their creativity. It's basically like Patreon for a musician. But if you don't know Lou Barlow's music and you want to know the type of music that he is putting out, I would say that this is very similar to the last full-length solo album he did, which came out in 2015. Excuse me. It's called Brace the Wave. It's fantastic. There's a song called Moving on it that I think is just, like, one of my favorite songs of the decade. And yeah, there's great songs, and the money's going. I think they said there's some insane percentage of the money going directly to Lou Barlow? Is it 90% of the money goes directly to him? Which is just, again, a great thing to be able to do for an artist you enjoy. So check out Lou Barlow's Brace the Wave, and 95% of the money goes directly to Lou. So that's a pretty great percentage. So check out Brace the Wave. If you like that, consider throwing $5 a month at this guy for him to create new music for you and for me. That's my piece. Chris, what's your pick this week?
So I'm just going to go with what is on my record player right now. And it's not breaking news for anybody. I don't think, or maybe it is. Okay. I shouldn't say for anybody, but, Iggy and the Stooges, Funhouse. It's one of the best records of all time. I feel like it's a lazy recommendation coming from me, but that's okay because every time I go back and listen to it, it's just like, why don't I listen to this record literally every day? It is, it is just so good. And there's just a, I don't know. I feel like Iggy and I feel like the Stooges are properly appreciated, but sometimes I feel like that record doesn't quite get up there into the ranks of where it should, in terms of just the overall history of rock, the history of, you know, recorded music, of any genre over the last 100 plus years. Just listen to it a lot,
listen to it loud.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the requirements, but yeah, I think that's the oldest recommendation I've made at this point, but it's still, I'm going to say it's probably better than every other recommendation I've made. it is sort of the holy grail of everything that I think a band should seek to be, the mix of being able to be that heavy, loud, fast sound, but still have a groove, that you would, you know, that you might think of, a different genre, whether it was rock or another one entirely, but to just have that drive behind everything and still be loud and noisy and doing crazy shit. I feel like the likelihood of everybody listening to this record already is high, but maybe not. But whether you already know it and you like it or love it like I do, and maybe it's been a little while since you put it on, go do that today. And if you've never heard it before, shut off everything else and just either, you know, get some really nice headphones or a proper stereo or whatever you got, and just listen to it and don't do anything else.
Yeah. I'll actually say, while a nice set of headphones is nice, I feel like there is so much, just pardon the reference, raw power in the Stooges that it'll get by like on a shitty transistor radio too.
Yeah. Yeah. It will. Listen to it in any format the first time. And then as you get into it, give it each one of those types of things where you can sort of hear it all. And then if you really want to take a deep dive, if you already know it and you haven't been exposed, there's the Complete Funhouse Sessions, which is everything they recorded, every take. It's just this massive box set that I'd never owned it physically, but it's out there on the streaming services now too. And I'd found a copy of it to download back then when it was almost impossible to find a physical copy of it. So if you already love it, or if you listen to it a few times and then you want to hear how the record was made, you can hear every take of every song.
For nerds like us, that is heaven.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, certain things come out. Like, I forget if it's TVI. I think it was TVI, where the one that's on the record was take 13. And the timing of the vocals at the beginning of it had been different for the first 12. And then on take 13, they just altered it just a little bit. And then it was like, yep, that was it. They changed one thing. And the first take after they changed that sequence wound up being the one that made the record. So things like that are fascinating. So yeah, there you go. That's Funhouse, just the record. And then if you're really into it, go listen to the takes and all that. I think it gives you as good an idea how it got to be the album that it is as if there had been a, you know, documentary crew there.
So I am typically somebody who's not very fast on their feet. I often think about the perfect thing to say like a month later, right? But I was in college, I was at a party, and somebody put on Dave Matthews Band, which is a crime. But it's a whole other story. And somebody said, like, oh, Dave Matthews Band, when the fuck has there ever been a good band with a saxophone player? And I said, The Stooges. And the guy looked at me and was like, oh, God damn it, you're right. Like, he was defeated that he hadn't thought of The Stooges before I said it. So that's like the one time in my life I have said something quick that was universally praised by those who heard it. So, yes. The Stooges make saxophone cool.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
Well, thank you all for listening. You made tonight cool. That's so fucking lame. I can't believe I said that out loud. Oh, God damn it. Anyway, the Mets have Marcus Stroman. This is a good thing. Go to AmazingAvenue.com. You can read the fruits of our labors for the past 72 or so hours. We've been furiously writing about trades and rumors. Our staff did an amazing job, so thank you, everybody. You can also hear all of our amazing podcasts at AmazingAvenue.com or on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us there, I assure you. You can find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Amazing Avenue. Chris is at Chris McShane. I'm at Brian Eaton-App. Both of those are on Twitter. And until next time, let's go Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.